Hey everyone, just want to encourage you to find us on your listening platform and give us a rating. Anywhere you listen to that has a rating system, go on over and give us a rating and maybe leave us a review. Let us know your thoughts. These ratings really do help. Thank you so much for listening. On to this week's episode.
Water, earth, fire, air.
Heart. When these powers combine, Captain Planet.
That's a different show.
If you could be part of any of the four tribes, would you be part of the Earth Kingdom? Would you be part of the Fire Nation? Would you be an air nomad? Or would you be part of the Water Tribe?
I feel like my demeanor might put me either Earth or Fire, which is why I actually think I would do better in Korra's setting of Republic City, where you have mixed tribes and stuff, right? So,
yeah, yeah, okay. I could see you being in both of them for sure.
I'm very fiery, like in fire, like the fire kingdom, right? But I'm also really stubborn, much like the earth kingdom folk are.
That is, yes. If we're going to assimilate this with astrology, then yes, earth is quite stubborn indeed. And Rolando's a Capricorn, so it's fitting. Eddie, what about you?
All right. So as a bending style or a philosophy, water bending is something that I would gravitate towards. As a cultural lifestyle, I would want to be an air nomad, okay? Because I just can't see myself living in the North Pole or the South Pole. It's so funny because I feel like I'll be the only one in the tribe that's always complaining how cold it is, you know? And it's like, is it just me or is it always cold? Like, why do we live in the cold? There's water everywhere that we can get, you know, why do we have to stay here, you know? So I think I especially the way it was represented recently, I really like the air nomads kind of culture or society. Mm-hmm. So
yes. So my answer is actually pretty similar to Eddie's. I think bending style, water tribe is it for me. But in terms of philosophy and just in terms of the representation of how it works in the show, I would want to be the Avatar.
Well, no, I mean, who would not want that burden? The question was not if you wanted to be the, of course I would want to be the Avatar. I would be such a Kyoshi.
Are you sure? Wait a minute. Are you?
I would be
that Avatar.
Yeah, like either Kyoshi or I'm trying to go.
Well, I would be Korra, and I would want to be in the 1920s.
I could also see myself being very Korra-like, because like Korra was, again, just really, really stubborn, really, really use brute force, right? So I could definitely see myself also being very Korra-like.
Absolutely. I could see that too, but I already claimed her, so back off.
Yeah, yeah. I'll go with Kyoshi.
Guys, what are we talking about? Well, if you are watching Netflix or if you grow up on Nickelodeon, then you know we're talking about Avatar, The Last Airbender, a television show that originally aired on Nickelodeon from, do you remember the years?
I actually do not know the years.
2005 to 2008. So it's almost 20 years old.
That's wild.
To mark the fact that, yeah, it's almost 20 years old, at 19 years later, we are going to be covering the new Netflix live action adaptation. And yes, we will be talking very little. About the M. Night Shyamalan film from 2010.
Wow, way to throw shade at
I know. We don't have much to say.
I watched that movie for the first time. I have a lot to say.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you have a lot to say, but let's not focus too much on that piece of property. So let's just get right into it. I'm Nicole.
I'm Rolando.
And I'm Eddie Z.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast
about unoriginality.
So we've been talking about it for a couple weeks. Just before we get into it, we did watch the Oscars, and most of what we had said was going to happen, except for Society of the Snow. It did not win makeup. Actually, I don't even think the one that I said was going to win won. I thought Maestro was going to win. It ended up going to Poor Things, which is technically something we could technically cover for the podcast, but we probably won't.
It is really not.
There's all these Frankenstein-type properties, though. So we should do, like, a big, like, Frankenstein and pop culture episode, because with Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein coming out, with Lisa Frankenstein, with Poor Things, there's almost this revival of this Frankenstein-like concept mm-hmm. happening in our pop culture.
I agree. I would love to explore that kind of like man and creation relationship and creator's responsibility to its creation.
Poor Things is a closer remake of Barbie than it is of a Frankenstein. I think the parallel. So actually,
isn't Barbie? Aren't they all somewhat inspired though of the story of Frankenstein? Someone who is born new and like gets to like go out into the world and look at things with these new eyes mm-hmm. that they're not quite a child, but they have this childlike wonder to them.
But I think it's also about being misunderstood by society. I think that's another big element of Frankenstein.
That is very much. But also, don't you think that that is a key element to both Poor Things and Barbie?
I haven't seen Poor Things. Barbie, was she misunderstood by society?
Well, yeah.
Misunderstood.
Yeah. I would say
Ken
so.
Misunderstood society and thus created the problems that would ensue, right?
I think it was both ways. I think she misunderstood the world that she walked into, and then the world looked at her a certain type of way. Mm. A very, you know, sexist way, albeit. So I don't know, this is complicated. We gotta talk a little bit more about this, and we're workshopping it with our audience.
I know, yeah. Because we're not talking about Barbie this episode.
Yeah, you guys could let us know your thoughts, perhaps. And also, you guys should tune into a podcast that we just guest starred on. If the episode hasn't been released, it's going to be released really soon. It was just Rolando and I, and our good friend Mackenzie Green, who's been on this podcast many times and will return, invited us onto her podcast.
Yes, the world needs nerds.
The world needs nerds, yes. And it was a lot of fun. So I'm sure if you've listened to this podcast for a long time, you know a lot about us. But if you just want to hear us shoot the shit, please head on over to Mackenzie's awesome podcast.
Yes.
So, all right. So should we kind of just, you know, get into it? I mean, this is a multimedia franchise we're tackling today. There's a lot to be said.
Yeah, we might as well just jump right into it. I'll start off with the questions we all have. When did you guys start watching Avatar, The Last Airbender? Like, did you watch it during the actual initial run, or were you like watching it sometime after?
I caught it at the tail end, about a couple years after I graduated high school. I would say around 2009, right before the movie came out in 2010. I started watching it. I was late to it. I think at that time, because I just came out of high school, I had this perception of Nickelodeon shows just not being part of my age group anymore. I wanted to watch more like mature mm-hmm. things. And so I kind of dismissed it. And when I saw it, I was just absolutely surprised by the fact that this was Nickelodeon content, comparatively at least to the stuff that I was watching on Nickelodeon when I was about 12 or 13.
Yeah,
but I still think I'm talking about Fairly Odd Parents. I'm talking about, I guess, even SpongeBob.
So long.
And even some of the other shows, I think like Angry Beavers, Cat Dog, I think those were shows on Nickelodeon.
I hated Cat Dog so much.
Yeah, it was a weird one.
Cat Dog was like a whack cow and chicken.
It kind of was, yeah, now that you say that. But yeah, so that's the reason why I didn't watch it. And then when I watched it, I was like, oh, wow, this is okay. Pretty insane. So,
Eddie, what about you? What's like, when did you, like, did you pick it up like after?
Yeah, way after. Yeah, okay. I was like, when it was in reruns, but they were still giving them. It would come on every day at 6:30. And I remember I was in an internship during that period. And I was just going through one of my low points in life. I was just like so depressed. And I remember that watching the Avatar was like one of my bright, bright moments like during the day. Yeah. And literally, because I would have these mandatory, like we would have to meet for meals in this internship. And
forced meals.
Yeah, we have to eat together. And so I remember, this is horrible that I have made up this lie, because they would just stay and chat afterwards, right? That, you know, the other people there, and it would be like, so I couldn't just leave. Mm-hmm. I had to wait until like conversation was over. So I made up this lie. Oh my God, please God forgive me. I made this lie that I had to call my mom at a certain time every day. So everyone knew that, like, oh, Eddie's going to touch base with his family at this time. So I knew like already at 6:25, I was getting up. I say, hey guys, I want to make my call. And I'd be like, oh yeah, no problem, no problem. And to leave to make sure I was ready to watch the Avatar.
You know who would not forgive you for that?
My mom. My poor mom. I love her so much. It was her birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, mom.
Oh, happy birthday, mom.
Yes, happy birthday.
But yeah.
Who would not forgive him? Was that who you were referring to?
No, it's just, but it's horrible because it's like mom's always saying, you know, call me, call me. But no, I remember like that being such, that was like something that really helped me, was like a bomb during my life, like a little healing slab, just like keeping me afloat during those little tough months that I had.
That's sweet.
I love that.
And me too. I did watch this actually. I think I watched parts of it during this initial run. So I remember visiting home from college and my sister, do you know how they would do random marathons of like Nickelodeon shows and stuff? And my sister was into it and I caught it with her. And as a result, I remember my sophomore year of college, I was able to catch like most of season two during a marathon in the summer, right? Like the summer of my sophomore year of college, and did not get to see the ending until it all finally dropped eventually on Netflix and I was able to stream it like from the beginning to the end sometime after. But no, I remember when I first saw the show, I was like, oh, I like there's like an interesting concept here. There's something cool here. And the story arc that I was watching for Avatar when I was watching it like in college was actually season two, which is I think my favorite season, right? That's a season in the Earth Kingdom. That's a season where we meet Azula. That's the season where the Earth Kingdom falls, Ba Sing Se. So that's just a really solid season to like really just like get absorbed into this one, right? And the final season is wonderful. Yeah, it's one of my favorite. It is one of my favorite animations. It's definitely one of my favorite properties to come out of Nickelodeon. And yeah, that's my relationship with it.
Yeah, it's one of those shows that I think if you haven't seen and you give it a shot, it's just gonna completely surprise you. And it has sparked such a huge fan base and just an entire franchise. And among the different things that we're going to be talking about, we're going to talk about the Nickelodeon show that ran for three seasons and then the movie that came out in 2010. I guess we can briefly talk about the sequel type show, The Legend of Korra, mm-hmm. which ran for about two seasons in 2012 to 2014.
Four.
And of course,
four seasons.
Four seasons? Yeah, oh, four wow. Seasons. Four seasons. My gosh. I actually didn't watch a lot of Legend of Korra.
Oh, you're missing out.
I know. You know, that show was just, people hated it when it came out.
People still hate on it a lot.
I don't understand. I think it's a very good transition of like a little, there's a little more adult. It's definitely a little more adult. And I love this character. Yeah.
It's definitely a more brutal show than Korra, right? Yeah. Like there's deaths in Korra that are for sure like haunting. Like for example, the way the Earth Kingdom Queen dies is an Earth Airbender sucks the air out of her lungs. Horrific way to get. Then this is why the show would end up going directly to streaming for its final season, where Korra comes out as in a lesbian relationship with Asami, right? So this show gets a lot of hate. I think a lot of it is a result of sexism and just not understand media literacy a little bit, to be quite honest. Like they did not give us Aang, because Aang had. So bringing back to The Last Airbender, like The Last Airbender follows that really hero's journey type of thing. And we have one antagonist throughout the entirety of the series where, as opposed to Korra, she was going through every season was a different type of hero's journey. She had different villains and they were all messing with, each of them attacked a different part of her being, right? Like her spiritual, her physical, her psyche. Like they were just like really, really putting her through the ringer. And so they had just different traumas to deal with. And I think as a result, The Last Airbender feels more mythic. And I think that's why it resonates so much more with general audiences. Like Korra is much more Buffy the Vampire Slayer than that mythic hero's quest.
Yeah, the very typical, like, hero mono myth type.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like Frodo and all that stuff. Yeah,
precisely.
I would agree with you. And just so audiences who are a little unfamiliar with it, this franchise, it's set in a fantasy world divided by four nations. Like I said earlier at the top of the show, the Water Tribes, the Fire Nation, the Air Nomads, and the Earth Kingdoms. And they used to live harmoniously until the Fire Nation kind of declared war.
They attacked. Don't mess up the intro.
Within each nation lies people who are capable of bending, essentially. So these elements can be bended by people. If you are an earthbender, you can literally bend the earth. And so the soil and stuff can come up. The air, you can bend the air, etc. And there is amongst all of these people, the one person who can bend all four elements, and that is the Avatar. And they are pretty much responsible for maintaining balance in the universe. So the Fire Nation, while they attack all the other nations and they pretty much are bring extinction to the Air Nomads, there
genocide.
Is a genocide. Thank you. There was a young Avatar who every time an Avatar dies, a new one is reborn. And so they use this time to attack, to put genocide onto the Air Nomads. And within that, a young boy who was the Avatar actually was able to flee and preserve himself for hundreds of years until he was found.
100 years.
Yeah. 100 years.
It was the 100 years war, Nicole. My goodness.
Sorry. Like, whoops.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, this isn't all important. So the main character is essentially Aang, our Avatar, who is... How old is Aang? I think he's like
12.
11?
12.
And he's the last airbender because all his
is
people...
He the very last, yeah.
And, you know, his people have been massacred.
Yeah. And he has been frozen. He's preserved himself with his beloved sidekick, Appa.
Mm-hmm.
And they have pretty much, you know, they're unaware of the fact that this has happened. And everyone has been waiting for the Avatar to kind of, you know, announce themselves and to show up. And they did not know that he was frozen in time for all these years.
Right.
He is found by Katara, who is a waterbender, and her non-bending brother, Sokka.
Mm-hmm.
And they pretty much help him on his quest to, you know, become better and stronger and to hone all of his abilities of bending. But he is being pursued by Prince Zuko of the Fire Nation, mm-hmm. who was pretty much outcasted by his father and said, you can't come back until you bring me the Avatar.
Yes.
So, and that's essentially the main plot. That there's so many other characters that are going to come into play, but those are, I think, the core of this story.
Yes, outside of Toph, but she doesn't appear till season two, and so she's not relevant, unfortunately, for this discussion, because she does not show up for the first season or the first film. And yeah, that's that.
Yes, unfortunately. I hadn't actually watched the M. Night Shyamalan film again. Azula, does she pop up in that?
She shows up very briefly.
Very briefly. Got
she shows it. Up okay. like at during the Agni Kai between Zuko and his father when he gets the scar.
Fire Lord Ozai.
Fire Lord Ozai.
Yes.
Yes.
Nasty.
Yeah.
Not the M. Night Shyamalan Ozai. Well, we'll get to it when we talk about it. But my God, I mean, the miscastings in this film.
Yeah. So when I first saw this film, I was like, oh, wow, they're showing Japanese anime in America on Nickelodeon. That's pretty cool. But actually, in fact, it's not. It's in the style of anime. But this is an American-produced show. It was produced by and created by Michael Dante DiMartino and Brian... I can never say his last name. Konizeko, I think. Oh, both of these guys were animators and designers at other shows like Family Guy and King of the Hill. And I think they even worked on Nickelodeon shows like Brian worked on Invader Zim.
Oh, that's a really cult favorite.
Yes, people do love that show. And yeah, I mean, they got together and they came up with the show, which honestly is such a great premise alone. You know, in terms of like fantasy, this is really good.
It is.
Like, it is.
It's
it is.
Really, really smart. Yeah.
Yes, it is. It's a wonderful show, especially for a kids show. It's a wonderful animated show. I think as much as I love this show, I think one of the things I have to always caution, especially when we're talking about the live action adaptations, is just like, guys, if this is a kid's show, like, it just, if you're translating it into live action, there's some things that will just never work out. Yeah. The fact that this is a kid's show and we have kids as the primary protagonists will always feel silly no matter how we adapt it. It will always feel silly.
Yeah.
And that proves to be true in both the film and the Netflix live action series. An observation, not a critique, because I think they're both handled obviously differently.
No, I would agree with that. By the way, do you know that there's an animated film coming out next year?
Yes, there's actually two apparently in the work. One is focusing on Zuko and his mother, and then the other one is like Aang's years as like an avatar as an adult.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm. Wasn't there also a rumor that some of it would be about Korra?
There's another idea.
Oh,
there's talks about maybe a Korra movie.
Interesting.
There's that.
There's
a lot because coming from what is Avatar Studios?
Yeah, so they have put together like Avatar Studios to focus on the animations of this universe, kind of expanding it. And so the other rumor is that, you know, they are working on the next series, which will focus on an earthbender.
Mm. What was Korra?
Water.
Of course she was. You know, like you said, this is a children's show, but there's some heavy, heavy topics here that are addressed. Not only, like you said, genocide, there's war, there's indoctrination, there's, you know, ideas of whether or not people have like free will, you know, almost kind of like pro-choice too. There's so many like, so one of my absolute favorite episodes.
Okay.
Is in the third season, Eddie reminded me the other day, where they come across an ancient waterbender who has the ability to bloodbend.
Yeah.
And this is something that Katara, at first being the waterbender, the main character waterbender, wants to learn, but then realizes that it is actually probably one of the worst things you can do as a bender.
Mm-hmm.
But because of her abilities, because of her strength, it's almost like she has no control over herself, that she learns it and she uses it in order to defeat this woman. But at the end of the day, even though she defeats the woman wins mm-hmm. because she has passed down this evil, almost like, ability to bloodbend. And to me, that's like, yeah, that's when I remember when I first saw that episode, I was like, holy shit, this is a kids' TV show. But like the fact that, like you said, like sucking the air out of someone and using it, it gets really dark. And it just absolutely like uses this fantasy genre as a perfect metaphor for really important issues, you know, like what is beyond your control? You know, how much is planned for you or how much, you know, can you actually like control about yourself? You know, what is outside of your control?
Mm-hmm.
That's just like one of the episodes that comes to mind. I mean, I don't know. It's pretty crazy. It's been a while since I've seen like the entire show and rewatching this Netflix one just reminded me of all the different ones that I had, you know, forgotten about, because what they're doing is that they're putting the whole first season and they're kind of like mix and matching it throughout each 8 episodes of the first season.
Yeah, they were being creative with how they're telling the story, like how they're bringing some of these storylines out based off of it. And yeah, no, I mean, to your point, like I think Avatar has The Last Airbender, the original run of the show, has some wonderful episodes and stuff, right? Like,
yeah,
I think so. My favorite episode is without a doubt like the fall of Ba Sing Se, right? Which is the, you know, it had like some of the best fight sequences between, you know, Azula and Aang. You had Katara versus Zuko. You know, the best part is when the Avatar goes into his Avatar state, which is a thing that gets explored a lot in the show, right? Like, you know, they call it the Avatar state. It's like when he connects with all the Avatars' previous lives and like kind of has this like cosmic power, and everyone's like in awe of this spectacle that's happening, and the only one who can resist it is Azula. She just shoots him with lightning, and it was just I remember my jaw dropping, right? Because like you literally just saw a child get zapped by lightning and fall from the sky. And it's like, again, like, yeah, just show, it's like, yes, a show can get very dark for a kid's show, but I think that's part of the appeal of this kind of storytelling, right? It's supposed to be epic. It's supposed to be grandiose and you know, I keep throwing the word around, mythic. It's a very, very mythic show. And I think that's why it does appeal to so many audiences. And I think that's also why Hollywood has just been clamoring to try to turn this into a live action franchise, because, you know, everyone loves Star Wars, right? Everyone loves the mono hero that you were talking about, right? The monomyth,
yeah.
And that's what we're getting. And in theory, it should, in theory, translate well in live action form and reach a wider audiences. But, you know, I think history has proven that it's difficult. It's a difficult task.
Yes, it is. I mean, things that come naturally for animation and looks just like beautifully and kind of seamlessly, it's so hard to translate.
For sure.
When it comes to live action. So they've definitely had their work set against ahead of them. I mean, I remember when we first talked about the fact that this was announced on the show back in 2019. Mm-hmm. And it took five years for them to make them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, the show is also just like, it attacks some heavy-handed issues, like even like the militarization of society, you know, imperialism, even like a similar theme with Harry Potter in a way, like the pureness of blood and of race and whatnot, like how people even look down on each other within their own nations and within mm-hmm. their own tribes or whatever. And it's unfortunately just like, I teach a class about fantasy, and I always say that fantasy is at its best when it's just a mirror reflection for our own society, when you can easily resonate with things in just, you know, this fantastical way. And this show is insanely relatable.
Yeah.
I mean, the main character, like, coming into their own power, you know, realizing, like, who they are and what they're capable of. And all of these characters, Sokka and Katara, like, going through their own personal journeys and stuff. Even in those little ways, this is like, mm-hmm. it's remarkably relatable.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic show. I mean, you should watch it if you haven't.
I mean, I have my qualms with this show, though. Like, my biggest beef with this show was just that I didn't need Aang and Katara to end up together. I needed Katara and Zuko to be together. They were the ones I shipped. They were the one true pairing, in my opinion. And I hope that they have an affair in the animated movies. And there'd be some drama.
That would actually be fun. That's the one kind of trope that I've never really been a fan of in these big epics, is that everyone needs to be like heteronormatively paired off with each other.
Breaks that norm, but
Korra does break that norm. We're not talking about Korra, unfortunately. But like in Harry Potter too, it was like, why do Ron and Hermione and Harry and Ginny, you know, these high school sweethearts all have to like end up together? Like, is this what I wanted from this story? Is this how it needed to end?
Right. Everyone needs
Star Wars 2, Han Solo and Princess Leia. Yeah. Like, yeah. Even in The Faculty. Remember that movie? Like, everyone's just heteronormatively paired off.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
Okay, Breakfast Club. Yeah. It's like, why? Why
does ridiculous have to
be? Yeah, and it was kind of like,
Paul's character would not. Wouldn't you end up like with a woman?
It was like all like,
thank you.
Almost a sense of like myth that these couples paired off in not typical ways.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Like the nerd, like the with nerd. The cheerleader and stuff like that. It's because the experiences they had.
The drug dealer with the teacher for some reason. It's just like, what?
But, so bizarre. But actually, I guess in that way, it's kind of fun.
I want to see that less. I definitely do want to see that less. Mm-hmm. You know, explore other kinds of relationship too. And for me too, the idea of even like the best friend, like, you know, like I wouldn't have needed Harry and Hermione either to get together, but I love that they were best friends. I love that. Mm. And I love to see that play out in other shows too, when it's a man and a woman and he doesn't have to be gay to have a best friend, you know, and appreciate her and be like, hey, let's, you know, this is our relationship too.
You know what I do love now? There's like a Twitter has like that gay, the queer reading of some of the other avatars, specifically Fire Lord, Sozin and Roku, right? There's very like the fan base is very much reading into like, this is a queer love story that we're seeing, not realizing it, but like Sozin was in love with Roku, and that's why he banned, I mean, that's, you know, mind you, this is like conjecture here, right? But like, that's why he banned homosexuality. We find out in Korra, it's Sozin who does that in the Fire Nation. The reason they think is just because some of the animation choice, in terms of some of the animation choices that we see, it seems like their relationship is more than just friends.
Do you think it's more problematic knowing that all this is for children?
No, there's nothing like what?
Like in terms of at least like the fact that everyone needs to be paired off, you know, like nobody can end up alone.
Yes, I guess, right? Like, isn't that I wouldn't call it problematic. I think it just, again, similar to like the Korra and Topanga effect, it just has these like high expectations. Now you're growing up like expecting.
Yeah.
That's true. That you need to find the love of your life when you're 14. Yeah.
All right. Put in an idea to have that part of a fulfilled life is to have this epic love story, you know?
Yeah.
I always wish love for everyone, but it shouldn't be what you're all about, too. Yeah. And I think when we're talking about this epic love story, we talk about Hollywood epic love story, because now that's all like in our heads, you know? So when we look at what we know about love or what we know about romantic love, and then we look about our own lives, it's always this pale comparison, because where are the like, you know, where the butterflies, where the birds singing, where the brighter amazing colors, you know? It's like all these.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah, I wouldn't call it problematic, but it does warp our sense of identity. And I think it's so interesting, right? Because Avatar is a story about kids going off and saving the world, as is Harry Potter. Hunger Games also comes to mind. And all of them, you know, what is more epic than a love story when you save the world, right? And it's just like, wow, like, okay, so I have to save the world and find my one true love? Like, I can't do all that.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, I've thought about this before. Like, in the concept of what it is to be put in a position where you are called to save the world, right? And having the weight of that. But it's so general too. Like, what does that mean to be the savior of the world, right? But the idea when you have personal and intimate relationships with other people is, I'm saving the world for you. Like, I'm saving the world for my friends. Like, Buffy was saving the world for the Scooby gang, you know? Mm-hmm, like, for her sister. The things that she did in the relationships that she had. And I also see that for Aang, his, like, it was so important that he had found family very quickly. Like, he found Zuko and Katara, and they were like, we're going to be with you because we know this is going to be tough for you, you know? And so we're going to be on your side. But also, they recognized that they were becoming their best versions of themselves in relationship with Aang. Katara, we get Katara's motivation in the live action in the way of saying, look what I can do ever since I met Aang. Before, I couldn't even bend a cup. Now, I can move oceans, you know? Oh, like,
slow down. Katara was faster.
It's just a dramatic speech.
I get it.
But, and then you have, you know, Sokka too, like him becoming, not just more a warrior too, but he's also become a strategist and a planner. And also seeing the other thing of like, there's an episode where he discovers like, hey, I have a knack for engineering, you know?
And I think the most important story element is he loses his sexism, right? Because that was like his trait early in the series. And it's something that like, as the show progresses, he realizes, oh, I'm totally fucked in how I think of women and stuff, right? And mind you, this is great. What a great lesson for a kid's show.
It is.
Yes, I would absolutely agree with that. I mean, there's some hardcore lessons to learn in this show. Some things that I think when you're a child kind of go right over your head, but that will become a little bit more apparent when you're older, which I actually think is some of the most effective kind of like lessons to learn when you're watching something as a child. You know, the things that you don't really think about until you're older and you're like, oh, wow, I just see that completely differently now. You know, it was like kind of just good old fun when I was 12. But now that I'm like in my 30s, yeah, this this hits differently. So this show is like kind of full of that.
Yes, this show is. But what about the movie? Did M. Night Shyamalan strike gold when he decided, I am going to remake The Last Airbender? And he didn't call it Avatar because Avatar had come out not that long prior. And so I'm assuming he didn't want to compete with the name Avatar. So it's just known as The Last Airbender.
Yeah.
Very smart.
Yes. Although at that point, like, there's a meme, the legend. Because if you're an audience member who has no connection to the show, The Last Airbender is just like, what is that? You might as well just call it the Legend of Aang or something, you know, as it's known internationally.
But like anything, too, it's just like you go and you find out, you know. It already had, I mean, come on. I remember seeing that preview and just like, you know, like this hooded person in the temple, you know, blowing out the candles. And then you knew what it was. It was just like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe it. I was so excited. Yeah. I was so excited. I was just like counting the days to be able to watch this movie.
Did you two have like a Tyra Banks moment after you watched this movie? Because I never saw this in theaters. I never saw this I only saw this for the podcast. But did you guys have that Tyra Banks moment? Like, we were rooting for you. How could you let us down?
Sort of, yeah.
I was so like super disappointed about it. Super disappointed.
And, yeah, it was supposed to be a trilogy and they just gave up.
It was the only movie I ever thought I actually fell asleep. I never fall asleep in movies.
And, oh my God.
You know.
That's terrible.
So I actually fell asleep. So yeah, I was not happy. But then it was like, okay, the hope was when we heard about the show coming out and we knew that the creators were going to be involved in it and we knew what didn't work. People already said out loud, we want diversity. We want like people that look like that. That look like us or have that color or that, you know, to take on. We want these actors to represent.
Oh, actually, let's backtrack a little bit because that wasn't what people necessarily wanted, right? It was something that came out after the fact, right? That
after
people
the fact
realized
of
after the movie had well been released and had some time to like kind of sit on it, right?
What I'm saying. Before you correct me.
I'm
talking from this point, like knowing that this was...
Oh, now, in retrospect.
In retrospect.
Okay.
I'm talking about knowing that this was going to come out in 2019, and we already... There were certain things that we were asking for already.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want it whitewashed.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
Which it was, right? So that's one thing for sure that is quite memorable about this. Like, Katara and Sokka are played by white people.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that, like, Aang, as he's known in the film, is very, very much not white, nor is Zuko, right? Like, the Fire Nation are portrayed by South Asian people, now watching this movie, I'm like, interesting, M. Night Shyamalan choosing the South Asian people to be the villain. Like, what are you... Did you know you were going to be the villain in the story? Like, did you...
Yeah. Isn't also, I remember the big thing about it being like, how is this movie so short? And like, wow, it's supposed to be a trilogy.
So short? It was 2 hours and it felt like three. I watched it with commercials. But
this was supposed to be like the entire first season in one movie. And it was about like an hour and 40 minutes, I think.
It was 2 hours and 10 minutes.
What did you watch? Because as far as I'm concerned, I think the original theatrical version was shorter.
Hang on. Now, let me just... Because unless, like, the version I'm watching is counting the... What is it? Like, counting the commercial breaks and stuff? I saw 2:10 and it felt, like, much longer.
I'm pretty sure that was one of the big, like, critiques when the film came out, which it was like, why is this so short? Like... And he wrote it.
Oh, you're right. It's 1 hour 43. Okay, yeah. So I guess the time code for when I was watching it was including the commercials. That I didn't know. My bad.
There you go. But to your credit, a short film felt that long. I mean, that's just not good. You know, M. Night Shyamalan's a hit or miss. This was a very ambitious decision to give it to him.
And I remember seeing the interviews that he was doing, and he felt like he was doing God's work when he decided to take on this movie. And it's just, my God, why did you think this? And it's just like, it's so poorly written. That's part of the issue. It's just like, I mean, the acting was just so bad, but like, part of the reason why the acting was so bad was because of how bland the writing was. And I know Eddie had told me that like the special effects were terrible, right? I just didn't know how terrible. It's not that they were terrible. It's that the special effects were so slow. They were just slow. And it kind of took out any agency in the fights as a result. It was a weird movie. And I think the only things, you know, that worked in this film, for me at least, was the idea that you needed the element nearby in order to bend it. That was, for some reason, I thought
the Fire Nation, right? So they had
Also need water, which I think is technically true, though.
You need water. You need water. So, but with what was different from the animated series was that except of just having fire just
combust
out of your hands, you know, they needed fire nearby. So there was always like a torch or something to catch the fire, manipulate it, and do what they wanted. So,
which I thought was an interesting way, at least to like bring some balance to the powers that these characters are supposed to have. But it was just like, it was just a weak film. And like some of the casting was just terrible. So the guy that played General Zhao, I think he had the more villainous undertones of probably portraying Ozai better, in my opinion. And I don't know if Dev Patel was any good Zuko because of the writing or because of his acting, or it might have been both at the end of the day.
He's a very good actor.
It probably would have been.
That's the thing. Yeah. Dev Patel is a good actor.
Well, he spoke very candidly about being very unhappy during that production and vowing to not really do a big Hollywood movie again. So it's probably he was miserable.
Yeah, there you go. But no, yeah. And Jack, I mean, Sokka, played by one of the Twilight kids, was just another, like, what?
Yeah.
It's just like, it's a mess. This movie is for sure a train wreck.
It's tricky because the people who voice these actors, though, in the TV show were, you know, of all mixed backgrounds. So, like, Mae Whitman is the original voice for Katara. And Mae Whitman, you know, is known for being, what's her name? Anne from Arrested Development and Roxy from Scott Pilgrim. So, yeah.
But I think,
And this was like 14 years ago. Like,
sure.
Things were just wildly different then.
Yeah.
So they were just going to approach it, I think, the same way that they approached the original show.
But it's weird because, like, all the surrounding cast members around Katara and Sokka were like, they did look like indigenous, like, you know, Inuit type folk. Mm-hmm, I don't know if that's the correct term that we use anymore. But yeah, they didn't look white. It was just Sokka and Katara that did. That's the weird part. I don't know. The movie was wacky, and it wasn't like an enjoyably good kind of wacky either. Like I hear Madame Web is, right? Like I hear Madame Web is a train wreck, but it's like a campy train wreck that's enjoyable. This was not that. This was just a bad movie. And that's the worst kind of movie. Give me something that I could like take away. You know, not to be harsh on the film, but like, I think the set designs were probably the only thing that was like nice about this film.
Damn, not to be harsh, but
look, credit where credit is due, you know?
No, absolutely. That's true. Right. Well, enough about the film. Let's talk about this new Netflix show, which, again, we've been talking about since 2019. If you go back to our Podbean and you scroll all the way back to episodes released in 2019, there's a whole mini-sode where we talk about it and our thoughts on it. So do you know a little bit about this background of trying to put together this Netflix show for the past 5 years? Because, you know, there was a bunch of people who entered and then exited and all this stuff.
Yeah, I remember. So when we covered it, it was announced that both the original creators were coming on board with Netflix to create this show. And sometime after the pandemic is when I believe Michael Dante DiMartino and Brian Konietzko, they left. Yeah, it was during the pandemic when they departed. And they cited it was due to creative differences. And so that was already like a big red flag to like the community. We were just like, oh, this doesn't bode well. So what's going on? And yeah, you know, the show took an insane amount of time to come from announcement to final release. And so again, not a good sign, I think, for a show. But I think a lot of that was also the pandemic, right? That kind of did interfere. And ultimately, the casting took another big time. And I think it was part of, I think, from my understanding, is like during the casting is when the creators had left the show. But, you know, they just cited it was, okay, their exact reason was that they said Netflix vision was just, and like their leadership was just negative and unsupporting.
So that's hardcore.
Yeah, they were just none to please. But they did receive writing credits for the first and sixth episode, right? So the first and sixth episode is still their work in the show. I don't remember which ones those are off the top of my head. But yeah, that's it. It was put together. And that's actually, so Avatar Studios did come as a result of this kind of falling apart. This fallout, because the two creators kind of, as a result, decided to like kind of, let's just create Avatar Studios so we have more creative control over our ideas and our content. And that's now why we're in this process of getting a series of new works from them.
Well, it's amazing that already the show has been renewed for a second and third season.
Full story is being told.
It's going to conclude with the three seasons. Do you think they'll even do a Legend of Korra if it's that successful?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that question, right? Because I actually think we should have done a Legend of Korra, not a Avatar The Last Airbender, right? Because Legend of Korra is a more adult show. I had told Eddie, I think I may have said it on the podcast, that the show, if you were going to remake Avatar The Last Airbender, you should have aged the cast and characters up, because there is something inherently silly about watching an 11-year-old save the world. It just is. And it just, as far as I'm concerned, just doesn't visually work, in my opinion, unless you're making an absolute kids program.
Yeah. And again, things that work in animation, not necessarily always going to translate to live action.
Precisely. So I was of the mindset of just like, age them up, like make Aang like 17, 18, make Katara like 20 something, make Sokka like 20 something, right? It doesn't matter. Like we're changing the medium. So let's change up some stories to make it just feel a little bit more cinematic, right? And then that you also have the added benefit by aging them up of not having to worry about your cast aging out of the roles really quickly, which is part of the reason why the show was picked up for seasons 2 and 3. But yeah, I thought the show should have been, the live action should have been a Korra, because as you mentioned earlier, Korra is really divisive in the community. You hate it or you love it, and that means you don't have this ardent fan base who has like their own ideas of what the show should look like. You can jump off almost at a clean slate because like there's already so much division that like you have more liberties with telling the story, because if the people already hate it, they're all, what's it called, they're probably gonna, they hopefully the goal is to like get them to like this version, you know.
That's, yeah, no, I mean, very true. So I'm sorry, are you a fan of the show?
I like the show. So, surprise, surprise here. I actually liked Avatar The Last Airbender, the Netflix adaptation. I think you have to just be able to accept that this is a different medium, and you have to accept that they are telling the story in a different way.
Yeah.
And you just have to accept that, right? And once you do, you're able to just absorb it. It's not the perfect show by any means, but overall, I ended saying it's just like, I liked what they did.
I want you to talk, Eddie, because you guys also watched more than I did. I watched about 4.5 episodes. I know you guys completed it.
We did.
So
well, at least you made it to 4. The sweet number.
I'm sorry, I'm like super busy. It is my sweet number at this point, 4. That's about usually as much as I watch. But what were you going to say, Eddie?
So definitely it had to be a little bit different from the animated series because, you know, geared for kids and stuff. So the idea was that there was a war going on, a 100-year war. So when you watch the series, at least for me, you always felt that that was just kind of in the background because the kids were doing their things, having these adventures. Aang was learning his bending because he had to master all the elements now. So he was like learning. Katara was getting better at water bending. And Sokka was on his own journey because he was picking up different fighting styles in whatever nation that they were in. So in his own word, he was having his own like developing as a fighter. But when you watch the live action series on Netflix, the war is in your face. Mm-hmm. You're witnessing kids that have been traumatized by war. They're scarred by war. They lost. Katara, Sokka lost mother. Mother was killed right in front of Katara because she was protecting Katara because Fire Nation were hunting down airbenders next. Waterbenders, excuse me. They were hunting down waterbenders, and Katara was a waterbender, and her mom was protecting her. You know, and she was killed.
And I assume the reason they were hunting down the waterbenders was because as far as they're concerned, they killed the Avatar, so they're looking for the next
generation,
right?
My logic would be is that at this point, the Avatar should have been at least 70 or 80 years old, an old man, probably going to be passed away soon. And he may, and so they're thinking like, all right, the next in the cycle would be the fire water. Mm-hmm. So let's kill all the waterbenders.
Let's commit more genocide.
That makes a lot of sense.
So,
and I would agree with you, although at the same time, compacting all of these different episodes that in this children's television show took like 18 or so episodes into just 8, things start to feel a little repetitive, particularly with Zuko's storyline. I don't know how you guys felt, but I didn't think that Zuko's, the way that they handled him was the strongest. Although I do think that bringing Azula in as early as, what was that, episode 3?
Yes.
Was a good idea to add more to him, so it's not he's always like just chasing down the Avatar, you know, or whatever, and kind of providing his own backstory to why he got kind of thrown away by his father and creating this whole dynamic between his sister. But other than that, I don't know. It's after a couple episodes, it was like because it's so compact and like one right after the other, and they're kind of longer episodes instead of, you know, a great 20 minutes when it comes to Nickelodeon. It starts to feel a little, like I said, a little repetitive.
Interesting. I think I disagree with you because Zuko was actually probably my favorite part of the show.
Really?
First of all, let's talk about casting. Dallas Liu as Zuko was chef's kiss in terms of cast. He understood the character in a way that I don't think any of the other castmates have understood theirs yet.
Okay.
And, like, there's a scene where in the second episode, right, when, like, Iroh's telling him about, like, oh, you know, so you caught him and stuff. He got away! Like, the way he just, his hand motion and, like, he's, how, like, fiery he is. It's just, like, this guy, he knows who Zuko is. And he's so charming on camera as Zuko. I love this young man. And what's it called? I didn't realize but until later on, but he's also, Eddie's the one who told me, he's from one of our shows that we love, Pen 15. Another shout out to that show. He plays the brother for the woman who was just in that show, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, right?
Yes. I do think the actor was very good, but his storyline, I just felt a little like, I don't know. I think because it's, to me, a half-hour TV show and an hour-long drama feel a little different. I don't know if I would completely say that this is drama because they went very silly with this show. Yeah. And a lot of these actors went quite cartoonish with some of their portrayals, which I liked. I thought those bits worked.
I agree with you. I think for me, where I had to disconnect was it was trying to do two things at once. It was trying to be like silly, funny, and goofy, but then at the same time, really brutal at times, right? Like some of the sequences were just a little bit not too dark for me. But the problem is like when you're trying to create a balanced show, it's just like it ends up leaving this question. It's like, who is this, a kid's show, or is this going to be, or are we trying to make it like a Game of Thrones-esque type of show, right? You can't have it both ways. You most certainly cannot. And I think that was ultimately that no defined tone, that was undefined tone, that was ultimately what was kind of the problem that I had with the show. Not to say that I didn't like it, but I'm just saying it's just like it didn't know which one of the two it wanted to be, in my opinion. So this is bringing me back to the conversation that Eddie and I had when we talked about One Piece. One Piece just went right for the whimsy. It went right for the silly, the goofy, and like kind of like the charm. it did not go for dark, even though it was a live action adaptation. I think that's a flaw that a lot of people have when we try to do live action adaptations, is to go dark, to go gritty, right?
Yeah.
And this show tried to do that. I mean, they had some pretty... The scene, the sequence of how the airbenders are wiped out, the beginning of the show, at its base is a pretty brutal depiction of a genocide, right? We don't necessarily see anything violent, but we do see some people burning up. Like, granted, they cut away immediately, but like, we know kids died, right?
Yeah.
So like, it's a pretty horrific intro to the show. And I thought, like, okay, cool, so we're gonna go dark. But then we go into the silly really quickly, especially with Sokka. I think Sokka, the young man who plays Sokka, was another choice of brilliant acting, because he had like a dumb, goofy face all the time, but it was perfect for Sokka. Absolutely perfect.
Yeah, Sokka was quite good. But don't you think that it also needs balance? Like, I actually thought it was a bit refreshing that it wasn't like just dark and gritty the whole time. Like, there was bits where I could breathe and like it could be lighthearted, and it was because, like, I just watched Genocide of Air People. Yeah, like, I'm glad now for the silliness of Sokka.
I don't know if I didn't need to be that dark, maybe. I think maybe we skewed a little bit too much.
It's too extreme?
Maybe, for this show.
I don't know.
That might be the thing, right? Because it's not too extreme by the stuff that I usually watch, right? Like, by no means. And yet, it did feel a little bit out of place, in my opinion. Another a scene that comes to mind is like when we see Azula for the first time, right? Like, and they arrested like the people who are going to try to kill the king, right? And like, we see them get ignited, and we see the pure joy on her face. I was just like, this might be a little bit too dark, I feel like. And which is weird, right? Because like any other property, I'd be like, okay with it. It's like, cool. And yet for some reason, I was just like, I just couldn't tell what was a tonal shift, the tonal direction that they were going to try to go with, right? And it was just kind of going, it was maybe too back and forth for me, right? And I kind of, but to your point, I actually did like the sweet, the fun. Like when they did Aang like on that water, on that air ball kind of hitting the statue, like from the opening, I thought it was funny. A lot of people on Twitter are just, I think they're just haters for the sake of hating it, but they complained about it so much. And it's just like, why? That was cute. That was funny. And this kid also, he won me over. Like, I did not like him as Aang in the first couple of episodes, but by the third episode, I think he found his stride in terms of like the performance, right?
Yeah. I mean, I would agree that you kind of have to push through the first episode in order to like really get a feel of the series.
Yeah, because I mean, that episode is weighted. That episode is like the front and center is Katara and Nan Nan. And let me tell you, Nan Nan deserves to be on the M. Night Shyamalan movie, because this woman could not act to save her fucking life. Like, she was her. And then the young woman who played Katara also just was not a good Katara, in my opinion. She just was not.
I agree. I mean, Katara is one of the most important pivotal roles, and she's one of the strongest characters, and that's not coming through. I mean, you almost are siding with Sokka every time she's like, why don't you take me seriously? You're kind of like, well, because you're acting like a child. Like, you know, you're not necessarily on her side. The first couple episodes, too, deal with, like, their teenage loves. Like, when they go to that, you know, isolated city, and he meets that girl warrior, those sparks. And
the Kiyoshi.
When they go to the
Kiyoshi warriors.
Yes. And when she finds like that guy who has his little like tribe of misfits that she has a crush on and stuff. Jet. I thought that was, again, really refreshing, because I kind of agree with you that it was all over the place tonally, but I liked those breaks, because when I can't stand things that are just too serious and too gritty, it's been this post Christopher Nolan thing that I'm just like, it needs to fucking end already. So the fact that this show was like, let's try and maintain that tone from the Nickelodeon show as best as we can, I applaud its attempt at it. And sometimes it actually really fucking worked.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
I mean, I don't know. But I also think that the things that also kind of took me out of it were some of the visual effects. I mean, that first episode with Air Nomads, and when they were like flying all around in the air, I was like, oof, how long did these visual animators have on this?
I understand where you're coming from. I tend to be pretty forgiving when it comes to visual effects, unless you're talking about a big budget movie. That's usually where I'm like a little bit less.
You don't think Netflix has a big budget for this, though?
I'm sure it does, but
I was fine with it.
I thought it was like, yeah, it's fine. Like, I was like...
I think for me as an editor and stuff, sometimes I'm like, it takes me just a little bit out is all.
I don't disagree with you. I know what you mean. I could be... So it's funny, right? I'm saying I could be forgiving, and yeah, I could be such a critic about it. I think because there is sometimes an over-reliance on CGI.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe because, like, I think the things that were important to me captured nicely. So for me, Appa was, I think, one of the best visual effects Appa. I had. I think he was actually really, really beautifully rendered. And he reminded me so much of my dog, Nico, that I just now, I want to dress up Nico as Appa and then like Kai as Momo for Halloween. I think it's going to be their costumes this year.
That would actually be adorable.
I know. Hopefully they'll like retweet me or something when we do it. But yeah, that was like some of the best rendering I had seen for sure in the show that really, I think, mattered to me. The bending itself isn't that, I don't know. I mean, for a show about bending, like, right, it'd be nice to like see some good bending. I thought I actually thought some of the action sequences were also pretty, they were fine. I didn't hate them by any means, right? Nowhere near as bad as the ones from the film. But it's a difficult thing to portray, I think, again, in live action. It's just one of those things. It's just like, you don't.
No, I would agree. I actually think that they succeeded really well in that too.
Yeah,
it's hard. They had their work cut out for them to try and condense this entire folklore essentially into this one season. And I think that there's room for improvement in season two in terms of the pacing, just so that it doesn't kind of, I don't know, after a couple episodes, I needed a break because I'm like, didn't I just watch this episode? This all feels really similar. but overall, it kind of, I don't know, it was kind of worth the wait because it ended up delivering in a lot of ways. And I feel like now, you know, timing's everything. 2010 was not the time for the movie. Not only was it just because of the way that we were casting things and it was too soon after the show. And I think that people's perceptions of what it should be and how it should look were different. Like, I think it needed all of this time and for the audience to kind of like grow up and to see all these other types of art for them to want to go back to it and now see this done in a more kind of dramatic, quote, in quotation marks, way. And so, yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. And I think ultimately what is going to just maybe improve the show would ultimately be like if Netflix or the producers just invested a little bit in like just some acting classes for some of the principal cast, right? They just need to like just a little bit. I'm not talking a lot. Katara maybe needs the most in my opinion, but I think just a little bit of acting lessons, because you know where the show I think for me shined for sure was when we had Fire Lord Ozai, right, played by Daniel Dae Kim.
Yes. Right? Yes.
Yeah. Like, I think he was a good Ozai. And Iroh, shockingly, he won me over also, like, after a few episodes. I didn't like him at first. It took me a while because, like, the voice acting for Iroh was so wonderful in the original show. And it was a hard, like, this is one of the things, like, you were changing mediums. You had to come to accept it. I was just like, I don't know if I like this Iroh. It's not my Iroh. And it wasn't. He was a very different Iroh. But it worked by the end. And I loved him and Zuko's relationship by the end of the season. I had told Eddie, I'm just like, you know, I'd be okay if they had done this. They said they were going to do live action adaptation, but just like focus on just Zuko and Iroh. I would have been like, oh, okay, fine. That's fine. Like, maybe it's going to be a chase the whole season or something, right? I don't know. But ultimately, I think the show did win me over. It wasn't bad. I think I have some qualms with it. Like, it wasn't by any means a perfect show. For me, costuming, I think, was a big issue this show had. Settings tended to look nice. The costumes sometimes just look too costumey, in my opinion.
Wow, okay.
You don't think so?
I think that's part of it that works, though, you know? Like,
you think
I don't
so? Okay.
I'm
the cartoonishness?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was very more Dick Tracy of that. Yeah. Like, it did feel... I mean, this is a children's, you know, fantasy series that it's based off of. Like, this world is just completely, I don't know. I was for it.
I don't mind necessarily, like, the silly costumes and how vibrant and colorful they were, but they should have been weathered a little bit. And again, this just brings me back a little bit to when we watched One Piece, where One Piece, they had these silly outfits. They had wacky hair colors, but they all looked lived in. This show, everything looked, like, fresh off, like, the seam, like, the fresh out of the closet. You know what I mean? It didn't feel lived in. That would be my only thing. I don't mind
it
the colors.
It did more have a sense of that these were costumes than actual clothes from people from whatever
culture
they
were coming
from.
I could keep the cartoonish looks. Like if they just had like some dirt on them, some like rips and stuff to just look a little bit weathered. Like if
I suppose. We've
been in a 100 years war, you know.
I love how not realistic this show felt though.
Okay.
It's fantasy, right?
It's true. Maybe it, you know, that's how it works for Nicole. You know,
sure.
It kind of does.
I guess it just brings me back to like the original Star Wars, right? Like if you look at the Death Star, even though it was like pristine white, if you look at it, like in terms of the set design, it wasn't pristine though. It was scratched up. It was a little dirty and stuff. That's kind of the vision it looked lived in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what about all those stormtroopers? They were pristine white, and those guys were constantly fighting.
That's fair. Good point. Good rebuttal.
It's good true. Rebuttal. But that was the whole thing. If you're military, you always had to keep your armor nice and pristine too. But when we were watching, what was the last one we saw? The last show that we saw,
Star Wars,
Ahsoka.
Oh, Ahsoka.
Ahsoka, right? And when we found those stormtroopers and they had, you know, their armor was all messed up. You know, their armor was like worn in and they had even gold. Was it gold? What was it?
It was like gold. They did like that Japanese art form of like kind of sewing it back together with like gold.
Mending the pieces together with gold. Yeah. So that looked like, even though it was a cost, it looked so real, like so, you know, it is real, but it looked like it was telling a story, you know?
Yeah. And one last thing I just want to say also, just to bring it back. Are you planning on watching the rest of the season, Nicole?
I might, yeah.
You've already seen the story though, so you know how it ends. But they did focus a lot more on Azula. We did get a lot more of Azula this season than like the original show. She never showed up in the first season of the original run. However, with Azula, we kind of saw a little bit of her Game of Thrones-esque type of thing, like kind of like how she's manipulating things in the background to kind of rise to power.
Yeah.
But again, this kind of brings me back to the silliness a little bit of like having kids in this leadership role. So she's like leading a fucking army and she's like 12. And I think it's silly to look at, right? She's giving like an impassioned speech at the end of the season.
Azula's not 12.
How old is Azula?
She's probably 18 years old.
Oh, she does not look it in this show.
Zuko's like 17. She does.
She looks like a child. She looks like a baby. I love her. I think she's adorable. And can you believe she was getting body shamed by haters on the show? They were calling her too fat. I'm just like, where? Where is there fat on this girl? She has like chubby cheeks, but she's so cute. What are you talking about? People are such fucking dickheads, man.
No, they really are. People are scumbags. Yeah. So there was Cowboy Bebop, then there was One Piece, and now there's Avatar. What do you think is next for Netflix to adapt as a miniseries? Do you think Bleach is coming?
SpongeBob.
Imagine. No, SpongeBob is still ongoing.
They're going to do it as like the Broadway musical where it'd be like humans. And like...
Yeah, maybe. I wouldn't be surprised if Bleach comes next, but
I don't know what that is. Me. Sailor Moon. Oh, I want Sailor Moon.
Sailor Moon. Okay.
I would love a Sailor Moon type of
version
remake.
I don't know. That would be hard, but I'd love to see them try.
Look, Japanese have tried. They did a live action Sailor Moon. It looks wacky, and I would love to see that.
True. Maybe they'll do live action adaptations of every Miyazaki property ever.
Is that
Hayao Miyazaki, the filmmaker?
Oh, okay, yeah, I thought so. I'm sorry. I wasn't familiar with the name. I know the movies.
Yes.
Spirited Away.
Okay, Spirited Away, Princess, House Moving Castle, Princess Mononoke.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I pronounced it wrong. Whoops. But yeah, so all right. But I'm glad to hear that you actually did not hate Avatar The Last Airbender, the Netflix
adaptation. It's really hard to hate this property. It's such a fantastic concept.
Wait, so you don't hate really... M. Night Shyamalan's movie?
You're right. No, that movie was not good. That movie did not do this property justice. So as long as you do this property justice, how can you go wrong? So
yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, I thought for me, I came out liking it way more than I was very cautiously optimistic for this show, especially after One Piece. And I did not come out disappointed.
That's
I think
good.
There's room for improvement, but
Yes.
It's a show that's just like, you know what? It's enjoyable enough where I can probably finish the series and stuff. So long as we don't go down in quality, I think we're fine.
Yeah. I think it's going to grow into itself as it continues. So, and they have two more seasons to, you know, really kind of ace it.
Yeah. And I think I'm going to try to film them simultaneously. Again, smart, because like if you've seen these young kids in the press tour, they are definitely aging out of these roles real quick. But again, the beauty of like doing the live action adaptation is just like, well, we can change the timeline, right? They're never specific as to like how long we have until Sozin's comic comes. So we can extend things a little bit and just be like, okay, it's been an X amount of years. Like Aang knows now waterbending. Because Aang did not waterbend at all once in this show, by the way. Just want to point that out.
Oh, true. Yeah. Ooh, things to look forward to in season two.
Yeah.
Well, what do you guys look forward to? What do you guys think? Have you watched it? Have you watched any of these properties? Are you a fan of the M. Night Shyamalan film? You should reach out to us. Because, you know, somebody might be. Reach out to us. Email us, remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com. Hit us up on Instagram, remakesrebootsrevivals, @remakesrebootsrevivals. Hit us up on Twitter, @remakespodcast. You can search for us for Facebook and YouTube and listen to episodes there by searching for Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. Visit our website and you can access old episodes on Podbean. And of course, if you're listening on a podcasting platform, please go to that podcasting platform, give us a rating. And if it's Apple Podcasts, give us a review and we'll read it online. We haven't read any online on episodes, so maybe we'll do that soon. Maybe
yeah,
we'll
when we're out of content.
Yeah, when we're out of content. That's really going to push people to write a review.
Write the review regardless.
Yes, please. All right, cool. Yeah, well, please, we will see you guys in 2 weeks for a film. We haven't quite decided which film it's going to be.
We know it's going to be a film. I didn't even know.
I know it's going to be a film. Okay. Yeah, we know it's going to be a film. Yeah, I'll tell you soon.
Okay. Sure.
All right, well, until next time, stay unoriginal.